This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky for August. Well, something to be said about August, I suppose, is you haven't got to wait up quite so late in the evening before it gets dark. As one does so, you can't help, if it's clear, seeing that lovely region of constellations, including Cygnus the Swan, Lyra the Lyre, and Aquila the Eagle, with their bright stars Deneb, Vega, and Altair, making up what's called the Summer Triangle. I've talked about those quite a bit, so I want to move over to talk about some of the stars that will be rising a little bit later on. Just below Cygnus is the little, very sweet constellation of Delphinus the Dolphin, and below that, to the lower left, is Equulus. And then we have two constellations below that I very rarely ever talk about, Aquarius and Capricornus. But I want to mention those because there are aspects to do with them that come up in the highlights. Over to the left of Delphinus, we have Pegasus, the winged horse, upside down, in fact, as we see it, with four stars making up the square of Pegasus. The top left-hand star, called Alpheratz, Alpha Andromedae, I guess it is part of the Andromeda constellation, which contains, of course, the great nebula in Andromeda, the Andromeda galaxy, M31. There are two ways to find it. You can start at Alpheratz, move one brightish star to the left, turn a bit upwards to a second bright star, the same distance again. At that point, turn sharp right. There's one star not far away, go the same distance again, and you should see a little fuzzy object close to another rather fainter star. Easily visible with binoculars, if it's very dark and transparent and no moon, you may well see it with your unaided eye. If you continue upwards from Andromeda, you come to the W shape of Cassiopeia. The three rightmost stars make a very good little V shape, and they actually point directly towards Andromeda. It's another way of finding it. If you take the top left star of that V and go to the next one in Cassiopeia, it'll be sort of roughly horizontal, I suspect, it points towards the constellation of Perseus. And if you scan along with your binoculars from there down into Perseus, you should see a little fuzzy glow, which actually is a pair of wonderful open clusters. They're called the Perseus Double Cluster, and that's well worth seeing too. So some nice things to see in the sky. Well, what about the planets? Well, we could say that Jupiter is beginning its next apparition, although it won't really become easier for us to see until towards the end of the year. But it's now high in the pre-dawn sky. In fact, it rises at midnight at the beginning of August, and by dawn, its elevation is about 50 degrees. Now, that's quite high. What's nice about Jupiter is that it's moving towards the highest part of the ecliptic, which means we'll see it highish in the sky over the next couple of years or so, and that's very nice indeed. Angular size increasing slowly to about 44 arc seconds. And of course, you can easily see the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it and the equatorial belts. So maybe it's a bit late, or perhaps get up early to have a look. In contrast, Saturn, which we've been looking at beautifully over the last few months, is now sort of rather deep down in the western sky after sunset. But you can still see it, in fact, at an elevation of about 20 degrees in the southwest an hour after sunset. But in fact, by the end of the month, its elevation will only be 5 degrees, so probably that's getting a bit late. But perhaps have a look at the beginning of the month. It's been a lovely thing to see over the last few months. The brightness is increasing somewhat because the rings are opening out. They're now about 8 degrees from edge on. And we give a plus sign to that 8, implying we're seeing the North Pole. So probably it's past its best, but still visible if you have a look. Mercury, that passes between the Earth and the Sun, which is called inferior conjunction, on the 16th of August, so you obviously can't see it then. But actually, because it's not having to move too far, it quite quickly emerges into the pre-dawn sky, and you could see it somewhere around the 27th of August, and about 6 a.m., it'll be about 7 degrees above the horizon, and it'll be down to the lower left of a waning moon, and further distance up to the right of the moon is the planet Mars, which we'll now come to. Mars is shining at magnitude 1.4 and at the beginning of August is in the western half of Germany. It's risen to an elevation of about 30 degrees at sunrise, so you can easily see it in the pre-dawn sky just north of east. By month's end, Mars, now in mid-Gemini, rises at 2 a.m. and will have an elevation of 40 degrees by sunrise, so well worth getting up for. The angular size only reaches about 4.5 arc seconds, so you're unlikely to see any markings on the rather lovely salmon pink disk. On the 5th of August, it passes just to the lower right of the rather lovely open cluster M35. That would make quite a nice photograph or telescopic view. Venus passes behind the Sun on the 15th of August, so not much chance of seeing it this month. It won't really be visible again for a month or so when it will reappear in the evening twilight sky. So what about some highlights of the month? Well, in fact, August is quite a good month for highlights, and one that we normally put at the top is the Perseid meteor shower. It's the most reliable of the year, which is around the 11th to the 14th of August, and the peak is in the early hours of the morning of the 13th, where you might easily see 30 or more meteors per hour. Now, last year was particularly good because it was very close to new moon. One thing about the moon is that each month, the day at which it's at the new moon or full moon, advances by one day. So can you see that 12 months later, if it was around new moon then, a year ago, it'll be at full moon? And sadly, full moon is on the 13th of August. Now, one good thing, in fact, is that the moon is at quite low deck. It's fairly low down in the sky, but still I think its light will wash out the fainter meteors. But there's still a chance, if you look towards Perseus or up in the sky to the east in the early hours of the morning, that's best, you've got a good chance of seeing quite a few. On the 11th of August, there aren't quite so many meteors, but at about 4 a.m. the moon will actually have set, and you'll have about half an hour before it gets light, where you could actually look for them without moonlight being in the way. So well worth having a try. Right, well, three more things. I mentioned Pegasus. It has a mane and a head, which sort of point upwards. Just beyond the highest star of the head is a rather nice globular cluster called M15. And I'll never forget when, quite some time ago now, I looked at it from southern France and was amazed how bright it was. In fact, I wasn't seeing M15 at all. I was actually seeing Comet West, which just passed it within about half a degree. Now, on the 2nd of August, another comet, Comet Garrard, sadly not nearly so bright, magnitude of about +8, gets very close, just half a degree above M15. But you ought to be able to see it with binoculars. By the end of the month, on the 27th, it lies just 7 arc minutes of another globular cluster, 8th magnitude, M71. So I put a little chart on the night sky page showing the position of this comet as it moves through Pegasus and over to the west. On August the 22nd, the planet Neptune reaches opposition, and that's when it's pretty well nearest to the Earth. It has a magnitude of about 7.8, so you should be able to see it with binoculars under a dark sky. On the 22nd, it lies 1.6 degrees above the star Iota Aquarii. I mentioned Aquarius in my little bit at the beginning. It might be worth having a look. Next month, Neptune reaches the same spot in the sky as where it was when it was discovered. So it's a bit of a historical moment. I'd like just to point out Vesta. And it's not the largest of the asteroids or minor planets. That's actually Ceres, which is actually now classed as a dwarf planet. But it is the brightest, and this month reaches a magnitude of 5.6. So again, you might just see it with your unaided eye under a dark, transparent sky. On August the 5th, when at its peak brightness, it passes close to a pair of fainter stars, while on the 31st, it's just 20 arc seconds away from the fourth magnitude star, Psi Capricorni, which, as I said, is down to the lower left of Aquila the Eagle. It's due south around midnight, and binoculars should enable you to pick it out. So, again, using the star chart I've given in the night sky page, why not have a try? So, good hunting. Let's hope we have some clear nights.
Thanks for that, Ian. And here's John Field to tell us what you can see in the southern night sky.
Welcome to the Carter Observatory's August Jobcast, coming to you from Wellington, New Zealand. With the winter solstice well past, we are now moving through our coldest part of the year. Hopefully, this will be accompanied with clear skies, allowing us long nights of observing. This month, we will look at the region of the sky stretching northwards from Sagittarius to Deneb, low above our horizon. Our galaxy, the Milky Way, is at its thickest and brightest around Sagittarius and thins out as we move northwards along the Cygnus arm towards Deneb. A dark rift runs through this part of the Milky Way. These dark features are dense clouds of interstellar dust and gas that are blocking out the light of the more distant stars. Flying along this part of our night sky, we find the celestial birds Aquila the Eagle and Cygnus the Swan. The four brightest stars in Cygnus form a large and easily seen cross and is commonly known as the Northern Cross. Deneb, the brightest star in Cygnus, is low down on our northern horizon, and it marks the tail. And a line of stars runs up the Milky Way to Alberio, marking the Swan's head. Deneb is the 19th brightest star in the night sky and is estimated to be 1,500 light-years away. Alberio is a showpiece double star. Although it is catalogued as Beta, the second brightest star in Cygnus, it is in fact the fifth brightest star in the constellation. When viewed through a small telescope or good binoculars, you will see a beautiful pairing of a pale yellow and blue star. The brighter yellow star is also a double star. The different colours relate to the different surface temperatures of these stars. 31 Cygnus may be the most beautiful binocular double in the sky. It consists of an orange and turquoise companion stars of magnitude 3.8 and 4.8. It is very low and difficult to observe from New Zealand. 61 Cygnus was the first star to have its parallax measured by the German astronomer William Bessel in 1838. Parallax is a slight difference in position of a star compared to the background stars when viewed from opposite sides of the Earth's orbit. 61 Cygnus is a nearby star 11.4 light years away and consists of a pair of stars of magnitudes 5.2 and 6.05. Aquila the Eagle is marked by a distinct line of three stars, the brightest Altair in the centre. At a distance of 17 light years, Altair is one of the closest stars to our solar system, and the name means the flying eagle in Arabic. In Greek mythology, Aquila represented an eagle carrying one of Zeus's thunderbolts. Straddling the Milky Way, Aquila contains a number of star clusters well within the range of small telescopes. NGC 6709 and 6755 are two pretty open star clusters. There are a number of planetary nebulas in Aquila. NGC 6751 and 6781 are just two of these. This is a very short phase in the life of a solar mass star. This is when the star's atmosphere is being lost into interstellar space during the star's red giant phase. This period may last for a few thousand years before the material is too dilute or distant to be visible. Early observers called them planetary nebulas due to their circular appearance when viewed through a small telescope. Perhaps the most famous planetary nebula is found underneath Aquila. Known as the Dumbbell Nebula or M27, it can be seen in binoculars as a faint haze. Small telescopes will reveal more of the dumbbell shape, and long exposure images will reveal the colours of the nebula. At 1,300 light-years away, this is one of the closest planetary nebulas to us and covers around about a quarter of the diameter of the full moon as seen as our sky. Sweeping around Sagittarius with binoculars towards Alberio, you may spot an interesting shape of stars called the coat hanger. This line-of-sight shape resembles the handy hanger and stands out really well. It is a fun object to discover. Planetary nebula play an important role in planet formation. The material lost into space during this phase of the star's evolution is enriched with heavier elements, oxygen, silicon, and iron, amongst others. This material is then swept up in the formation of new stars and planets. It was in this process that the ingredients were made available for the formation of our solar system. In earlier epochs, this heavier material would not have been available, so only gaseous planets of hydrogen and helium could have formed. Saturn is one of the two giant gas planets in our solar system and is still the only planet well placed for viewing in our evening sky. Weighing 100 times the mass of the Earth, Saturn and the more massive Jupiter are similar in composition and ratio of gases to our star, the Sun. The average density of Saturn is less than water. The inner core is much denser, but the outer regions of the atmosphere are far less dense. The system of rings that surround Saturn are unlike any other in our solar system. The main ring structure is over 300,000 kilometers wide from one side to the other. These rings are incredibly thin in comparison, only a few tens of meters thick. Fainter rings have been found up to 13 million kilometers from Saturn. The main rings are mostly made of a mixture of ice and rock and are highly reflective. Saturn was known as Cronos, the keeper of time and the harvest god, and was also known as the father of the gods in Greek mythology. A small telescope should easily reveal the rings and Saturn's largest moon, Titan, and possibly one or more of the other moons. The current moon count is 63 confirmed, the same as Jupiter. Recently, though, up to 150 moonlets have been discovered, but have not been officially confirmed as moons. Mercury is low down on our western horizon after sunset, and it is not far from Saturn and the star Spica. Jupiter will rise in the east around midnight and will be high in our morning sky before sunrise, followed by the fainter planet Mars appearing as a red star in the morning sky. Jupiter will reveal its four largest moons in binoculars, and the cloud bands should be seen in a small telescope. Also at opposition is asteroid Vesta. At magnitude 5.6, it is visible to the unaided eye from a dark sky location. Binoculars and a star chart will be useful to find this asteroid. The robotic spacecraft Dawn is currently orbiting Vesta and is returning amazing images of this large asteroid. Venus is too close to the Sun to be seen, but soon will be moving into our evening sky later this year. Thanks for listening into our Jodcast, and the team at Carter wish you clear skies.